Welcome to the Beat Podcast. I'm MJ.
BD.
And this NBA season is well underway. Less than 10 games have been played, but already we're seeing a lot of revelations in the NBA. And we thought we'd just take the time in this podcast to briefly mention some of the more interesting stories going on right now.
I guess we'll get started with just kind of break down the team. So I guess we'll start in the East. I remember when we talked about the podcast before the season started, we talked about Chicago not doing much. I made a mistake because I thought Derrick Rose was injured. So he is playing, and I think he's playing pretty well. That was a really impressive win that Chicago had over Cleveland. So that to me shows that, you know, and obviously it was the first game and Cleveland isn't at full strength, but it still, I think, shows that Chicago's probably going to be contender in the East, and, you know, they'll be able to at least knock out one of the better teams. And Cleveland, of course, other than that one loss to Chicago, since then they've won 5 in a row, so they've looked amazing. Defense, they're holding teams to around 92 points, which is impressive.
Yeah.
And they're scoring over 102, so there's more than a 10-point difference between them and their opponents. That's really good.
In the NBA, if you can keep a team under 100, that's good defense.
But low 90s, that's really good. And then, of course, Atlanta, kind of surprised that they got off to such a good start. I mean, obviously, we knew from last season that, you know, they played well. They played against Cleveland, but they got demolished. And even before they played Cleveland, they didn't look very good. I thought that, you know, that they wouldn't be as good as they were, but they've gotten off to a great start, and they've won 7 in a row. They did lose their first game, but since then, they've just been great. They haven't, their difference between opponents and how they score is not quite as impressive as Cleveland's, but it's still very good. They're almost 6 points better than their opponents, and they're also holding their opponents to under around 98 points. They're scoring almost 104 points themselves, so that's a pretty good efficient offense. The other two really good teams in the East, and it's kind of good that this year so far there have been four that are really standing out. Toronto, they've won 5 in a row, and then they just lost one. So they're really good. They're holding their opponents to just 95 points, and they're scoring about 103. Not a big surprise there, because they played pretty well last year, and they had an amazing record. But the team that's really surprised me is Detroit. I don't know where they came from.
Yeah.
They're 4-1, which is really amazing, because last year, Detroit, they sucked last year. So I'm pretty impressed with them so far. Now, we'll see, you know, in the next few weeks what happens. Is this just, you know, they're off to a good start, but as the season continues, can they continue to win? Or are they going to kind of be like the Knicks were a few years back, when they got off to an amazing start, and then after Christmas, they just started falling apart? Other teams that are in the top 8... right now are 500 or a little bit above, but Chicago is 4-3.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, once the season progresses, as long as they can stay healthy and Derrick Rose especially, they'll be in that top 3 or 4. I think it's going to be between Cleveland, Atlanta, Toronto, Chicago, and then I think Miami. Right now they're at 3-3. As long as, you know, they don't have any major injuries, they're going to be in that top 3 or 4 spot. And they're also playing really well, because they're holding their opponents down to under 93 points. Probably caused them to lose a little bit is they're only scoring just under 97 points.
Yeah.
So as the season progresses and they gel a little bit better, because Chris Bosh is finally back, their offense will maybe pick up. So far, according to the numbers anyways, their defense looks good.
And Miami has a potential great backcourt with, obviously, Dwayne Wade and Goran Dragic. Honestly, I don't really know how Goran Dragic fell off the map, because at one time he was like the premier guard for Phoenix.
Right.
Somehow he seemed to become the third option, maybe because he's less of a scoring point guard than the other two options.
Which is kind of good for them, because obviously they can get a lot of their points from Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh.
Exactly. So I think he'll fit in wonderful. Dwayne Wade is definitely a scoring guard, so
yeah,
it helps to have another guard that's sort of complementary versus the same style of player.
Right, because if both of those guys need a lot of shots for their game, sometimes that can hurt a team.
Yeah.
Especially when you're playing in similar positions.
Exactly. I mean, I remember when the first, when the Miami Heat super team first came together, one of the big difficulties they had was LeBron James and Dwayne Wade both demanding the ball so much, because I think they naively thought that sort of like Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen, it would be an easy transition. I think people sort of forget that Scottie Pippen had the ability to be a facilitator and sort of let Michael take over in the scoring department. So yeah, as far as Goran Dragic and Dwayne Wade, they're complimentary.
Definitely. So I think Miami's going to be one of the top teams in the East, of course, as long as the superstars are healthy. I guess some disappointments in the East. Well, I mean, it's early. Only, you know, 6 games have been played, which in the NBA, that really isn't a lot. So, you know, I mean, even though, like, Washington and Miami are 3-3, you know, we'll see in the next few weeks some of these teams will kind of distance themselves. The really bad ones are going to continue to lose. As the good teams start to gel, they'll pull away and we'll kind of have a better picture. But obviously, I was a little bit surprised that Brooklyn is 0-7. They have the worst record. I would have thought they'd be at least a little bit better than that, at least like, I don't know, 3-4 or, you know, maybe even 2-5. But 0-7 is, you know, it's a bad start. Philadelphia, not a huge surprise there that they're 0-6 because they weren't very good last year, but it's kind of interesting, you know, Brooklyn a few years ago, they had such high hopes to contend, and now it's like...
They just never really got it together. I was so disappointed. I mean, I thought Paul Pierce, and I'm not saying he didn't do this, but I thought he would take his leadership ability would really propel Joe Johnson and Deron Williams to new heights. And I'm not saying that it's his fault, but I think it's safe to say that they never came together as we thought, that's for sure.
Especially that year when they got, Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett. We thought that, you know, a veteran, you know, those two veteran guys, when they were in Boston, you know, they beat LeBron and the Cavs.
Oh, yeah.
So many times, you know, they thought, okay, maybe they could help the younger guys get past Miami or at least make it competitive, but I don't think it was. It was never really...
And I feel like after that first year in Brooklyn, they really didn't try to keep that team together at all. And so you see the results a few years later.
Yeah. 0-7 starts, pretty bad. Really great start by Cleveland, Atlanta, Toronto. I think that Chicago, Washington, and Miami are going to pull away. Milwaukee's going to be in the mix. Yeah, so it should be a pretty interesting conference. I think still the odds-on favorites to win it all in the East is Cleveland.
Yeah.
But I think they're going to get a run for their money by, you know, Atlanta, and there might be another one or two teams. So the East should be a little bit more competitive than it has been maybe 2 years ago when it was just Miami and that's it.
I'm really happy that prior to the season, there was an emphasis to get Kevin Love involved. And when you look at the statistics, LeBron's averaging almost 24 points a game this season. Kevin Love is right there at about 16 points, which is on par for last year.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, they're getting him, you know, involved in the offense. So that's definitely very refreshing, especially for a versatile player like him, who, you know, last year was sort of an afterthought because they used him as a spot-up three-point shooter. And this guy is a talented offensive player and definitely a lot more than just a spot-up three-point shooter.
I guess we can move on to the West. It's pretty interesting there. So far, it's looking kind of like last season where... You have just, aside from Golden State, it's like everyone else is pretty much tied from like number 2 all the way down to number 5.
Yeah.
So, basically, I mean, the best team by far this year, it's not even close, is Golden State. I mean, they picked up things right where they left off. We thought Cleveland was good. How about this? They're holding their opponents down to 97 points, a little bit more than 97 per game. And they themselves are scoring almost 116. There's over an 18-point difference.
And just to clarify, that as of right now in the Western Conference, what would be seeds 2 through 5 are all 4-2, and that's on November 8th, so it's, you know, it could change soon, but that's pretty damn close.
Yeah, and they've beaten some good quality teams. I mean, they beat the Rockets, they beat Cleveland, Memphis. I mean, they have also played against some weaker teams, but even the Rockets, they beat by, they beat them 112-92, and then they destroyed Memphis 119-69.
Wow.
So, you know, even the good teams, The only close game against one of the good teams was against the Clippers, and they beat them 112-108. Yeah, I mean, this team has just been on fire. So good. No one else really in the West other than them has really stood out to say they're the second best. I would have thought up until, you know, the Clippers went on this little two-game losing streak, they were clearly the second best team. But you can still kind of say that. But then everyone else really is kind of in the mix. I mean, Portland's off to a good start. San Antonio's off to an okay start, too. I mean, they're also 4-2. They lost their first game to Oklahoma City. It kind of showed just how good Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant can be. I think Oklahoma City is going to be a force to reckon with this year if they can stay healthy. They've lost three games in a row, which kind of surprised me. I mean, they went on fire, and they were able to beat the Spurs. Now they're 3-3 now, so I don't know. We'll see. I mean, it's, like I said, it's very early. That doesn't mean much. Three-game losing streak in the NBA isn't the end of the world, but hopefully they can continue to win a lot more games. But they're, I guess, in the same boat as Dallas. I think they're going to be... It's going to be competitive. Minnesota is 3-2. I doubt that they're going to stay in the... So they're...
Yeah.
You know, so Utah is 4-2. I don't know. I don't think that... I think they're going to get knocked out of the top eight, and they'll be replaced by, you know, Memphis or Oklahoma City. So I think the West is going to be very competitive. Things continue. It looks like it's just going to be Golden State, clear number one, safe for home court advantage, and then 2 through 6 or 7 are all going to be within a few games of each other, like, kind of like last year. And then maybe the number 8 seed will be the only team that might make it, you know, like 49 or 50 wins.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at some of these teams in the Western Conference, it's definitely a big, big mixture and a big, you know, division as far as talent goes. As far as the Minnesota Timberwolves are concerned, you have the former Rookie of the Year, Andrew Wiggins, and a potential Rookie of the Year, Karl-Anthony Towns.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you have Kevin Garnett as a veteran leader teaching these guys the game. So they obviously probably won't win a championship, but there's a possibility they could make it into the playoffs at a lower seed.
And, you know, the number one and the number two pick played, you know, the first game when the Lakers played Minnesota. And I was pretty impressed with Minnesota being able to come back. As a Lakers fan, I thought actually the Lakers would do a little bit better because they played so many weak teams in the beginning. And I thought, you know, with Kobe and those new guys, they could have won against some of those. But they lost, obviously, to Minnesota in the first game. They lost to Sacramento. And I thought that they could have had at least a winning record by now. But I was pretty impressed with Minnesota. A little disappointed with how poorly the Lakers have played. Not that anyone, myself included, really expects them to make the playoffs or you know, be title contenders. Yeah, I think it's going to be a fun season. The other really surprising thing for me is New Orleans. They're off to an 0-6 start.
Yeah.
And they were the team that made the playoffs last year and beat the Spurs in a very important game, the last game of the season, to knock the Spurs back and, you know, get themselves, you know, into position. So an 0-6 start is going to be very difficult to overcome. You know, you're going to have to win close to 50 games to make it into the playoffs.
Well, you know, BD, they obviously have a talented and potential MVP candidate in Anthony Davis.
Yeah, he's awesome.
But if they continue to go 0-7 and don't win, he obviously won't win MVP.
Yeah.
But with that being said, you know, they've had it rough. They've had some injuries.
Yeah.
Right now, Anthony Davis is averaging 25.2 points a game.
Really, really good.
So he's pulling his weight, and yeah, he's getting almost 10 rebounds and a little bit more than 2 assists. But it'll really be up to new coach Alvin Gentry and the role players and other teammates to really help out Anthony Davis because, you know, he's doing his part. He actually had a career game the other day. Was it 43 points?
I think he had 43 points. Yeah, really good.
So he's obviously pulling his weight, and hopefully his teammates will get in line and follow because it would be a shame to see such a talented player on a losing team. Yeah, if they continue to lose...
As soon as his contract is up, he'll be out of there.
Yeah, he'll be wearing a new jersey.
I think that's kind of how it is. You know, you either, you know, you get a good superstar, and then once they start to play better, you know, you can use that to help attract talent. And if you don't, I mean, they'll be gone. I think, you know, like you look at Cleveland, before LeBron left for the first time. I mean, he extended his contract, you know, at least once, because they were able to stay competitive. They did get some talent around him. It wasn't enough, of course, to get to the finals or anything, but if you don't, I mean, those guys will be gone, so hopefully they can start to pick things up. You know, a young team, I think sometimes they're able to, when expectations aren't high, you can get over that mentally and say, you know, it's only 6 games, still got, you know, 70 or so left. We can, you know, we can overcome this. You know, we win 2 or 3 in a row, and we're right back in it to where it's not like you're down 15 or 20 games. So hopefully, you know, they start to pick things up. If they win 1 or 2 or 3 in a row and they lose one and win a few more, they'll be right back in it, and it should be a good season for them.
Some other positives with Western Conference teams is players that have been highly touted, such as, personally, I've actually said LaMarcus Aldridge is a potential MVP candidate. Right now, he's averaging about 15 points, 9 rebounds, and a little over 2 assists per game. So in the NBA, that's not necessarily MVP stats, but he's definitely pulling his weight, and I expect that to continue as time progresses, so and that's a positive.
Whenever you go to a good team like that that has a lot of good veterans, you know, your numbers are always going to
take a dive.
You're going to take a dive because, you know, until Duncan and Parker and Ginobili leave, you're going to have to share some of that, you know, some of the shots with those guys who are still great players.
Other highlights include the fact that Stephen Curry is almost averaging 34 points a game, so he's obviously pulling his weight. I actually predicted he will be the MVP, and so far he's definitely putting up MVP-like numbers. Kobe, he's averaging a little over 16 points a game, so while he's had some rough shooting so far, I'm sure that that'll settle down, and Lakers will get a few more wins under their belts despite a little bit of a rough start. But Kobe's definitely still got it, and he's still pulling his weight.
And I do like the seeding, how it's done now. I like the 1 through 8 ranking in each of the conferences better than the divisions. I think it's more fair, and just because you win a division, I don't think that means you should be guaranteed a spot, especially if you're horrible. Just to kind of take it to a league that doesn't have it, as of now, in the NFL, for example, the Colts, right, they might make it. They don't improve, they'll have a losing record, and they would probably make it into the playoffs in the NFL just for being the best of the worst in that division. So I think that this was a good move for the NBA. Some of the other teams last year, you know, with Portland, right, they were the ones that benefited, even though they didn't have as good of a record, they had the number 4 seed.
One last thing I'll mention just about the seeding that we've been talking about is for the Eastern Conference, it's basically been your usual suspects. Atlanta, Cleveland, Toronto are leading it just like last year. Still very early on. Detroit's there, so it'd be pretty cool to see Detroit sort of come out of nowhere and mix it up this year. One thing that really impressed me, because as I've said in past podcasts, I'm not a big believer in the draft. Obviously, one day these players will be the future of the NBA. But for the most part, except for a few standouts, it usually takes players about 2 to 3 years to really get acquainted to the NBA and
You're Magic Johnson.
Unless you're Magic Johnson, then you're in the finals your first year.
And you win after Kareem goes down.
But one positive I'll say for the New York Knicks is, even though they're still losing a lot, Kristaps Porzingis, hopefully I said his name right. I apologize if I didn't.
Attempted.
Yeah, I probably said it wrong. But anyway, he's averaging about 12 points a game and 8 rebounds.
Sorry to interrupt, but I can't wait to hear Charles Barkley say that name.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if he already has. I haven't watched the TNT crew. I plan on watching him this Thursday, but I hope that I get to hear the Chuckster pronounce that.
Yeah, it's gonna be rough, that's for sure. But, you know, I'm not a big believer in rookie players because very few will be like a Michael Jordan, a LeBron James, or a Shaq and really deliver right out the gate, but so far Mr. Poising just has done so. So good for him, and hopefully continues. Obviously, when you're 7'3", it helps.
Sure.
But for those who know the history of the game, there's a lot of people that are 7 foot over who don't end up being great NBA players. So that doesn't really mean as much as you might think.
Right. I think was it Sean Bradley? I mean, he was like 7'1" or 7'2". No. He was 7'6". Yeah, he was just as tall as Yao Ming, and he was nothing special. Without his height, he probably wouldn't have been Hell, even if he was 7 foot tall, he probably wouldn't have even made the NBA. It was just that extra 6 inches of height that helped him even be in the NBA. But
yeah, God bless Sean Bradley, because he's a good guy, but
yeah.
he might have a record for being on the most posters in the NBA.
Yeah. And I like him as nothing, you know, just kind of kidding around.
Yeah.
But yeah. Yeah, so just because you're tall doesn't mean that
in fact, BD, we're at an interesting time in the NBA. You know, when I think of the 90s, a lot of the great basketball players were centers. There were so many. Patrick Ewing, Hakeem Olajuwon, Shaq, Dikembe Mutombo, the list goes on.
Yeah.
When you look at the league now, how it's evolved since the 90s, it's really gotten a lot smaller.
Mm-hmm.
And really where the NBA is stacked at this point in time, in my opinion, is the guard position.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many great guards in the league. It's just ridiculous.
Well, I remember when, like, the early 2000s, even when, like, the Lakers had their three-peat, if you remember, like, most of the greatest players were, like, it was Shaq, Tim Duncan, right, Kevin Garnett, Dirk Nowitzki. The greatest smaller guys were Kobe and Iverson.
Yeah.
So you did have, like, the biggest names were the tall guys. Yeah, it's changed now. Now it's definitely more of a point guard or shooting guard league. Yeah, I remember watching those All-Star games. It would always be, you know, those four guys would get so, you know, they would just dominate every year in the West.
And now there's just, there's still some good big men, but it's not like it used to be, that's
right,
for sure.
Definitely.
But yeah, I think one of the reasons Dwight Howard gets criticized is because it's not like the 90s anymore.
And we know that, you know, winning with big guys works, because it was just a few years ago when, you know, Kobe, Powell, Lamar, and Andrew Bynum were able to win when they had the tall guys really dominate, and of course Kobe on the perimeter. So it can work. You know, none of those guys were top 10 best ever players. It was, out of the three, Pau Gasol is the best, and he'll go down into the Hall of Fame, but he's not, you know, Wilt Chamberlain or anything, so it can definitely be done. I would say Dwight Howard is more talented than Pau Gasol, definitely.
And it's really interesting, BD, how the trends in the NBA have changed over the year, because at one point in time, the thought process was the big men was the way to go.
Right.
You know, you had Bill Russell, you had Wilt Chamberlain, you had Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, you had players like Dave Cowens, Moses Malone,
yeah,
Shaq,
right,
David Robinson.
Yeah,
and over
Tim
the years,
Duncan, I mean, yeah, they were able to win too.
It's like we've deviated from that to where you almost think that big men aren't as important as they used to be. And, you know, what it really brings me back to is this philosophy that the Lakers had. Mr. Buss thought that when he hired Mike D'Antoni that he wanted to bring back the Showtime-era Lakers and have a run-and-gun-era Lakers. And I just think that philosophy is, you know, not the most accurate philosophy to have, because I've always felt that you don't tell the great players in the NBA what style of play they will play.
Yeah.
They dictate the game, the way the game will be played.
Sure.
So, for instance, when you have Shaq, you can say you're a run-and-gun team, but you're not a run-and-gun team.
Yeah,
because Shaq is the cornerstone of the offense. You're going to be a slow half-court team. That's just the way it is. And that's not to say you can't have a great big man and be a run-and-gun team. You know, the Lakers did it with Kareem when he got older. But you can't really dictate the way players will play. Their talent will dictate the style of the team. Okay, so a few last issues. This was just a brief recap of what's gone on so far in the NBA. Kobe, just a few days ago, in a recent interview, basically sort of squashed rumors that he might leave the Lakers. As his contract expires, he says, "I'm a Laker for life. I'm not playing anywhere else." Obviously, I'm not the happiest person about that, because personally, I just feel like he's a great player and I would like to see him go out on a highly competitive team. But, you know, it's his choice. But if he holds up to his word, which doesn't always happen, professional sports, whether the Lakers are good or not, it looks like he might stick with the Lakers.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, whatever he decides to do is fine, obviously. Even if it was to retire now, he'd still finish as one of the top, in the top 10 or top 5 or whatever. He's still, you know, a lot of people say, you know, the closest thing to Jordan, so. I mean, plus 5 championships, 7 finals appearances, has had an amazing career, what, 3rd all-time scoring.
Yeah. The last thing we'll mention today is that recently LeBron James got so frustrated after a bad shooting night that he ripped off the sleeves on his jersey. I think me and have slightly different opinion on this, but I mean, I'll just be honest with you. I hate these sleeved jerseys. I really despise them. They contour to the player. They're not like a t-shirt. I think the marketing team behind the NBA thinks that people are more likely to buy them because some people don't like to show off their arms, which to me doesn't make sense because most people who wear the jerseys wear a t-shirt under it anyway. But yeah, man, what do you think, BD?
I don't really, it doesn't bother me. But obviously, like, if the players don't like them, if it really is affecting their shot, because, you know, I think, like, I was reading an article on ESPN, and if to you and me, like, if we were just playing a game in the backyard, it wouldn't matter, and we're not professional athletes, but, like, these guys practice their shots all the time, and if they say that it affects them a little bit, you know, that could be a difference between winning a game or losing one, or missing more shots than you normally would. And if it is bothering them, then that might be something that team has to revisit. But I think that it's Cleveland that wanted those t-shirts because I heard they sell, you know, they sell well. But I think the NBA says you have to wear them during the season, at least in 6 games or so. So the last time that they wear them. But then that's something that either, you know, they have to put up with it, or it's a money thing, I guess, you know, where if they sell well, I think they're going to continue to make them.
All right, BD. And, you know, speaking of LeBron James, and that's what we call a segue, you know, we have to do a lot of research for these podcasts to check some of the facts and everything, refresh our memory on things. And this is just something that sort of irks me. LeBron James has 4 MVPs, okay? Michael Jordan has 5. Michael Jordan was the scoring champ in the NBA 10 times. That's more than any other player. He also won 6 championships. LeBron James has 2 championships. Shaq and Kobe, most people would say that the 2 of the top 10 players ever, they both have 1 MVP apiece. So how is it fair that LeBron has 4 MVPs? And it's not really LeBron's fault. He's not the one voting. Just to me, I just don't understand how this player... it gets put on a pedestal, whereas these other players, like Shaq's arguably the best center of all time. You know how?
Yeah, we're definitely one of the 3 best.
So what do you think about that, BD?
I don't know. I don't know that he didn't deserve to win it that many times, but yeah, I felt like Shaq and Kobe maybe deserved to win more than just the 1 each. I was kind of surprised. I mean, Shaq was probably the most dominant player ever in the NBA, definitely as a center. So him to only win 1, I thought was kind of interesting. But yeah, it's definitely interesting that he might finish his career having the most regular season MVPs, and he's only has, as of now, only 2 titles, whereas Jordan has 6, Kobe has 5, so I don't know, we'll see.
Obviously, as BD said, one of the key things there is regular season MVP. That's what they're rating your performance on, the regular season. So if you get injured or something where you're not playing a lot, you know, your chances get lower. And, you know, there's been a certain thought process with a regular season MVP. Typically speaking, some of the general reasons players will win the MVP is if they are the difference maker on a team that makes significant progress. So if a team has a horrible record and then a player comes in and obviously they're scoring a high volume of points or assists and the team starts winning, that's one potential way to win the MVP. As being the big difference maker in a team. And then the other factor is simply just being great, you know, scoring high points per game. So I think secretly, while it might not be publicly stated, being the big de facto, players get penalized for playing with other good players. And the reason that happens is because obviously the game is easier playing with other good players. So obviously there's a lot of factors going on there with the regular season MVP. LeBron James is certainly an MVP player and one of the greats in the game. There's no question about that. He'll go down as one of the greats. His ranking as of now may be hard to define. But yeah, it's just an interesting conversation. Obviously, Shaq and Kobe playing together sort of hurt them because they're basically the best guard and the best center of their generation on one team. So that might, you know, equate to why they don't have as many MVPs as you might think they should. But it's just an interesting conversation. I think LeBron deserves MVPs, no question about it. I think he might have 1 too many, because for me, when you win the MVP award, it should be more difficult to win, and you should reward winning. You know, for me personally, he has to have a few more championships to win another MVP. And I think that's fair. All right, and thanks for listening to the Beat Podcast. And we'll have more updates soon as the season progresses. Again, I'm MJ.
With BD.
We'll catch you next time.
All right, see you soon.